going to the airport under the conditions I'm going to the airport under tomorrow morning, that is ridiculous. I realize how absolutely crazy it is. It's just as crazy as if you've been told, hey, listen, man, I know that that water is like nothing you've ever seen before. I know that it's rushing in flood stage. I know that it spells death and danger all the way across it, and there's no way for you to get across it. But listen, if you'll just walk up to that thing and put your foot in it, it'll stop and it'll back up, and it won't just stop. It'll back up miles all the way up to that city way up there called Adam. What? I know you guys are really thirsty, but if you'll just speak to that rock, water will come out of it. What? Here's another one of those, this cannot be a coincidence. It is now 7:16 a.m. on August 24th, 2021. The last time I will walk this trail. Tomorrow I will spend extra time, you know, anchoring in the words and promises of God. And this cannot be a coincidence. I grab my phone. I'm at the very back of the trail. I'm almost at the very end of Smoke Rise Trail. I grab my phone to make this recording after being in prayer the whole way out, and it's 7:15. It used to be, you know, that God was showing that to me when I cried out for 7:15, for 1 Corinthians 7:15, but obviously that doesn't apply right now. This is Micah 7:15, I have no doubt. As in the days when you came out of Egypt, I will show them my wonders. Now, last night, I sent Lisa for a second time the recording I made called The God of Wonders, which is a writing and a title that's from Austin Sparks, where I read and expanded on what he was teaching. She found it most encouraging. Maybe a week or two ago when I sent it to her, and so I sent it to her last night, and she said she was, again, very encouraged by it. And it talks about God must consistently bring us to a place of total helplessness. And then he comes in and does it as if it were the easiest thing ever. And so here it is. I've just been in the Lord in prayer, and I have had complete faith this morning. There has been no ability for me to even say, Lord, if for any reason I've heard you wrong, nope. It's like the Holy Spirit won't allow me, and I'm not allowing me to pray that. I am going forward believing that I have heard. God has had plenty of time to course correct me, plenty of time to let me know, you're not believing me right about this. You got the dates wrong, whatever it is. No, I didn't get the last two dates wrong, February 2nd and February 12th. I got what I thought was going to happen on those dates wrong because I assumed. But nonetheless, now we have concrete things that are happening on these dates. We have a wedding planned on the 9/11, and we have tickets with an airplane that lands on 8/28. So there's evidences that support these dates over and over, not to mention all the providences of God showing us these two dates back to back over and over and over. Even last night in Lisa's recording, she mentions 8/28, 9/11. She mentions it. She sees these back to back last night in her recording to me. So it must have been that it was 8:28, and then she looks down and sees the timer at 9/11. Those are the two numbers she spoke in her recording last night, back to back. So this is God speaking to me real time as I'm on the trail, telling me, Michael, I've done it before. And what have I been actually thinking about? Just this morning, I was telling him, God, the way you controlled that courtroom. Back on February 16th, 2012, it's me against two attorneys, my ex-wife, and a paralegal. And me sitting all by myself with God. It looks like total defeat all day long. 9.5 hour court trial. It looks like the judge hasn't heard a single word I've said. I get no sense of feedback whatsoever that this could in any way be easy for me by the end of the day. I'm going to be in trouble. On the lunch break, I've turned white. This is my first experience of really putting everything on the line to trust God. So I do not believe he holds this part against me. But it looked like I was totally defeated. And I thought to myself, by the time we got to the end and she has her closing arguments and I'm looking at the way the judge is responding, I felt to myself, I guess that's it. I'm done. This has not gone the way God has told me. I guess I'm being handed over to my enemy. And it looked like I was being defeated. And God allowed Satan to come in like a flood, exactly what I've read this morning, so that he can then show himself as supreme. I told Lisa yesterday, as difficult as this is for me to believe, that I'm getting ready to drive to the Atlanta International Airport, one of the busiest airports in the world, with no passport. You know, in India, you cannot even get inside the airport, the international terminal, without a passport. How am I going to even get into the international terminal without a passport? I mean, if you think about this, this is really, really unbelievably. I mean, this is some scary stuff. I'm going with no passport. Then they're going to ask me for my visa. Where's my visa? Then they're going to ask me for, where's your medical exam showing that you are you know, able to go into New Zealand? I don't have it. Then they're going to ask me, where is your 72-hour COVID thing? I don't have it. Then they're going to ask me, oh, Mr. Criswell, to get on this flight, you have to have pre-booked an MIQ reservation. Do you have that handy? No, I do not. That's five strikes. I mean, this, let's just, I'm looking at the scary stuff right now just for a minute, because this is the reality. And God is clearly calling me to walk into that airport and expect him to do the absolute impossible and wonders. When he did what he did for me in that court, my enemy turned white, and I was so dumbfounded by what I saw God do for me in that courtroom that I could not even speak for 20-something minutes. We get into the elevator, and I'm weeping. I can't even tell my parents what happened. I'm so emotionally amazed and shocked and stupefied by how my God had delivered me, and all day long, it looks like I'm totally defeated. And in the last 5 minutes of the trial, he turns it all around. The enemy came in with a gigantic book against me, a case, and God slammed it shut in 5 minutes, as if they wasted their time bringing all that. That is an incredible victory. And I told Lisa last night, I said, sweetheart, do you know something? When I walked into that courtroom, that was the first time that I really, really, really trusted God for the impossible. Here it is. The enemy came in like a flood. Not only that, I was having all these horrible dreams of her trying to chase me around the kitchen with a knife and murdering me, or me being with her somewhere and, you know, getting up and talking to her in a hotel room and saying, you know what, the problem with you is I realize you have a demon in you, and waking up with the covers being pulled off of my back, me completely paralyzed, unable to move, and yet feeling these creepy covers being peeled off of my back by a devil. That is some crazy stuff. Satan was able to come in like a flood, and the Lord allowed it. And then in the very end, he shows himself supreme. And so now you look at this, faith should be progressive. The next biggest, scariest thing I ever did really was the tiny house. No doubt going to India was a big deal. But it didn't seem to have as many consequences. Things that could go wrong and leave such a disaster as building a tiny house with no money. And God's telling you, move forward on this. And you have to trust him to provide. And he did. And he did it in the most normal ways. And there was a few little answered prayers along the way. But he ended up solving this crisis of how am I going to build this and have the money to do this, the time to do this, the know-how to do this. He provided it all in very amazing, practical ways. It all came together, and I, in the end, was not put to shame. But it was a huge faith challenge to build a house the year that God tells me to take off work, and I'm essentially not guaranteed any income. Nevertheless, Lord, because you have said. And so you look at all these stories, and you think about how even God wanted to get me, I hate using it as an example, but how God had to bend the Indian government rules in order to get me into India and to get the marriage registered. God had to do this. He did not let us be put to shame. We saw obstacle after obstacle after obstacle, and God brought them all down. This is far more complicated, far more difficult than India. Even Lisa said, she goes, honey, wouldn't you agree that India was nothing compared to this? I said, oh, sweetheart, India was like a warm-up for this. I said all I had to do for India was to get a tourist visa. And not only that, I wasn't going to move there. And not only that, but there was no COVID. COVID has caused such a crisis right now. You know? And so you're talking about seriously difficult, absolutely impossible, completely helpless circumstances that we are in right now. Absolutely, completely helpless. No help for us. There, only God is our help. That's it. I see this whole situation is unbelievably impossible. I've said this 1,000 times perhaps already. It's that impossible. So here I am seeing this 7:15. You will see my wonders as you did coming out of Egypt. Well, that's like me going into that courtroom. And if I failed in that courtroom, in that divorce, the possible consequences and the likely consequences were jail for an inability to pay the exorbitant amount, $4,200 a month they were asking for me. Had God not been with me, when the waters came in over our head, I would have drowned. So here I am now. I'm not facing jail as a possible consequence, but it's actually perhaps even worse. And I'm pretty sure it would result in my inability to trust again that I'm hearing from God. It would be like, okay, this I'm done. But I know I'm not. I know that I'm not. And here I am this time tomorrow at 7:30. I will be preparing to go to get the rental car to pick it up, I think, by like 8 or 8:30 in the morning. Tyler will take me and drive me to get that rental car. So I'll probably be sitting still on the couch with all my bags packed, ready to go. Sitting on the thing, I'll probably bring the rental car back to Tyler's house, load my bags in it there, say goodbye to Tyler, and I will be headed off to the Atlanta airport tomorrow. And I am going with nothing but a plane ticket. I have nothing else. Here it is again, another time where a law, a government law, this is going to be like time number 5 or 6 or something, where a government law is going to have to be broken in order for God to get me to where he has called me to get. And I believe that God has allowed this to remain for a reason. I believe there is an absolute reason. I told Lisa, I said, sweetheart, while I was brushing my teeth last night, I had the realization that God allowed that failed, denied passport application to come back. Last night, 6:19 p.m., I received a notification from my stepfather, and I said, here it is, 8 weeks to the day. It is denied, and I get the paperwork back. 8 weeks to the day. God has, and I just thought, Lord, this is intentional. As with everything else you've done, it's intentional. And then I realized, here, look at this. It comes back with only, I got it last night. That means I only have 1 day left to do anything about it. Look at what God did. He intentionally left me no time. Like my first thoughts were, Lord, well, do you want me to send in the 19,000 and just at least be able to show a receipt so that I can show to people in good faith I paid this, even though it's an unjust amount of child support? Should I just pay it? And you know, that still isn't going to do any good for me. It's like, even if the passport had come back, it would have been a miracle. I told Taylor, I said, we go, we see this. It's going to be a miracle one way or the other. If it's there, it's a miracle because we owed child support. I did. I said, if it's not there, it's still a miracle because it's going to take a miracle in place of that thing to get me into New Zealand. How do you get into another country without a passport? And without a passport that has been denied to you because you owe child support, going to a country that's border is closed. You cannot get into the border. And the only visa you would have potentially qualified for, you do not qualify for because you have never lived with your intended partner or / wife. You don't qualify. You have no medical examination. You cannot even apply for the medical examination, or rather the You can't apply for the medical examination without the passport. So everything I tried to do was blocked. That streams in the desert about locked up until faith. That's exactly what's happened. I have been in a prison of circumstances. And it's like, I'm Paul and we've been singing in jail. God, come send your angel to get us out. God has shown he's going to send. This is going to be the most miraculous thing I have ever seen in my life. This is like, I told Lisa, this is like the book of Acts, biblical faith. This is going to be absolutely incredible to see this thing happen. This is like something that you would see in the book of Acts. I don't have any idea how God's going to do this. It's not my business. But he's going to have to do something that is indeed, as he's just been showing me, wonders. That Micah verse. As when you came out of Egypt, I will again show them my wonders. He's been showing me that he's going to bring his name glory. And he's raised me up for this reason, that he may make his power known to me and make his name known amongst the nations. Well, there is no better evidence of God's power in my life than when I end up on that plane tomorrow night headed to New Zealand. How in the world could anybody listen to this and expect anything less than absolute foolishness and disaster for me? I mean, how in the world is God going to do this? How in the world is God going to do this? Wow. Just incredible. This morning I woke up with fear. I could feel the fear trying to creep in. When I'm laying there just kind of getting asleep, I think I woke up at 3:30. I feel like I slept great, but I could feel the fear. I also noticed that my stomach was a little torqued. Something was going on with my stomach, and I couldn't tell if that was from nervousness or if it was that I had eaten something bad and my stomach wasn't doing so right. I feel fine now. And so I got up. I started to get myself encouraged. I listened to The God of Wonders by Sparks, and I listened to God is Able, that chapter on the doxology, the prayer of doxology by A.W. Pink, where he talks about Ephesians 3:20, God is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we think, ask, or imagine. And the whole thing is about how we have so little understanding and belief of God's power, that God has an exceedingly easily, he has infinite power, infinite resources. And you know, when you look at this with human understanding, this thing looks like this is going to be tough for God. That's what I told Lisa. She says, yes, honey, it does. And I said, this really looks like it's going to be tough. I mean, seriously, I mean, how is God going to do this? We just looked at the book of Acts, where Peter, Lisa and I were talking about this. I said, look, this is one of my numbers that points to this passage about the angel coming and tapping him on the side and saying, get up and quick. And he goes, and the shackles fall off of his hands and feet. And then they walk right past the guards, and the guards don't see him. And then the gate before them opens automatically. So, you know, you look at this kind of stuff. You look at God sending like an earthquake to free the prisoners when Paul's in there. And you look at this kind of stuff and you just go, this is unbelievable. I mean, God's willing to send an earthquake to break the jail apart, to get the people out, to get Paul and Silas out. That's incredible. So, you know, I'm thinking to myself, what is he going to do? Is he going to like make me invisible? How do I get my bags checked? I don't understand how this is going to work. I have no idea. Am I going to walk into the airport? And is there going to be somebody there that's standing there with a sign, Michael Criswell, because he gave them a vision? And then Lisa and I said, okay, so even if God gave one of the executives at the airport, let's just say God gives a dream. You are to go stand at this gate this time tomorrow. You're to look for a man wearing these kind of clothes, this color hat. His name is Michael Criswell. Put a sign out. And I show up at the airport. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking about this. Like, it's starting to seem like this is the only way something like this could happen. That I'm going to walk into the airport, which incidentally, yesterday I made the connection that the airport is my Jordan River. It was a beautiful illustration that the Holy Spirit gave me. The airport is my Jordan River. The Jordan River represents death. When they come to it to cross over, it's at flood stage. We have COVID, we have closed borders, we have no passport, we have no MIQ. It's at flood stage. It couldn't get any worse. We have five things that are standing against us. Five things. No passport, no medical exam, no visa, no MIQ thingy-majigger, and no COVID, no MIQ appointment, a reservation, and no COVID 72-hour test showing that I don't have COVID. So you look at this and you say, okay, somehow or another, God is saying, I'm going to get you past all five of these, and not just once, but he has to get me through the airport, which is the Jordan. Then he has to get me into New Zealand. Like Lisa said, she's like, supposing an executive or some airline personnel or whatever gets you onto the plane. She's like, honey, how do you then get into New Zealand? And so this is the only thing that I've been thinking of, is that I was going to wake up and God was going to have a passport, a visa, and an MIQ. And I told Lisa, I said, sweetheart, look at this. I'm only three documents from being able to get in. There's no other physical things. I have a plane ticket. I'm three documents from being able to legitimately get on that plane and legitimately get in. It's just documents. It's just a piece of paper. Somebody says, yeah, this guy's healthy. Yeah, this guy is, he's clearly coming in for the right reasons. He's a godly man. He's going to get married. He's got a marriage registration and he looks healthy. He doesn't look like he's got TB to me, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I just have three little things that I need, basically pieces of paper to get me into this blessing with my wife. And yet those three things might right now be as big and as tall as Mount Everest. They are impassable. They are the Red Sea, the Jordan River, and the walls of Jericho combined. The walls of the Anakite cities up to the walls up to the sky. I mean, it's incredibly difficult, impossible. So I'm thinking to myself, how is the Lord going to do this? I have no idea. But like I say, supposing I get there and there's a person with a sign, or supposing I go in and, you know, I had this really kind of sad thought the other day. I don't feel sad anymore about it, but the other day I had this sad thought of, Lord, this is when I was just coming to grips with the fact that I may have to go to that airport. And really the Lord had been showing me, this is the Jordan. On this side of the airport that I'll enter in, it's impossible. Like I cannot get from that side of the airport to the other. Think about it. Once I get on that plane, I'm done. If God gets me on that plane, not if, when God gets me, I'm just speaking, you know, for the point of making this argument. But when God gets me on that plane, I have just crossed the Jordan. Because you can't get on that plane unless you have MIQ, unless you have a visa. They will not let you on that plane without a passport, visa, and MIQ. So essentially, the death is the airport. Until I can get through that ticket counter and get through security, that's the Jordan that's at flood stage. That's where all these things stop me. The passport, the visa, and the MIQ, that I can't cross it. And so God was showing me, it's when you put your foot in to the Jordan that the Jordan backs up and all that death flees before you. And that's when the Lord gave me, after I had, Lisa had just pointed out this morning in the recording I listened to, she said, honey, I listened to that prayer that you recorded the other night. And she goes, you were right. It was a very bold prayer, but she says it was beautiful. And she said it was amazing. And she said that, you know, did you hear in the part where you said, Lord, if you want to have a passport ready for me and all that in the morning when I come down? And you said, well, if not, God, just give me guidance on what you want me to do. And she said, honey, the next morning, he answered your prayer. He showed you that he wanted you to go to the airport, that the airport is like the Jordan River and you have to walk into it, put your foot in it. And so this is what the Lord has shown me, that this airport, the Jordan, is representing Jordan, death ruling and reigning. You cannot cross that Jordan River. It is impassable. You will drown. There is no way to get in to that Jordan River. If you're a priest and you're the first guy that had to put your foot in there, you're nervous because if you had to keep walking, you're going to have your feet knocked out from underneath of you and you're going to drown. But no, as soon as they put their foot, the first foot, when he saw their faith, as soon as he knew that they would believe him, then the waters back up. And that's exactly what God is doing with me. So what he's doing with all of those who believe him is that we have to walk right up to the obstacle. And then that's why this Grace Gems that I got yesterday, which I read to Tyler, was so incredible, about how we always expect God to remove the obstacles miles out. No, he lets them stay there all the way until we get right up to the edge. And that's what this deal is. This is picture perfect. He's been teaching me this and showing me this. I mean, is it a coincidence that I received this grace, Jim, about the Jordan River backing up when the priest put their foot in the water, when Lisa has been seeing 313 every single day all the time about this, Joshua 313, and same thing with me. And then we get this devotion yesterday, the very day that God's given me this analogy already, that he sees the airport as a Jordan River and I have to walk into the Jordan. You have to be either strong in faith to know you've heard God, to put your foot in that Jordan, carrying the ark. You know, you're carrying the testimony. You see this? If you haven't heard from God and you carry that testimony into that Jordan River, and you lose the testimony in the ark of God, man, you have brought so much shame upon you and Israel, etc. You needed to have known that you know that you know you've heard from God, and you needed to have strong faith. Well, what am I doing but carrying on my back the entire testimony, the ark of the testimony? I'm carrying this story. I'm carrying this ministry. All of it is on the line going into that airport. I'm either going to step foot in that airport and God is going to do some unbelievable wonder that I've never even thought of or heard of in my whole life, or the whole testimony washes down the stream of death all the way down into the Dead Sea and all of the ministry goes into nothing. And all the people of Israel would have been standing on the shore going, oh my gosh, what a disaster. They would have been again saying, we were better off when we lived in Egypt. And they would have all walked away with their heads in shame. But instead, God makes it such a huge deal. And in Joshua 4:24, Joshua explains that the Lord did this. He brought them to that Jordan at flood stage. He let them see this incredible miracle to show them that the arm of the Lord is powerful and that you might always fear the Lord your God. And hence the 4:24s I've been seeing. That God is showing he is going to do something so unbelievably powerful. And I've seen this airport situation now as, okay, that is the Jordan. And I said, sweetheart, I know that as soon as I walk inside that airport, you see, watch this. When you step into the Jordan, you can only go one or two steps before it's impassable. You can no longer go or you're putting your life in danger. You can't. Unless God backs it up when he sees your faith to put your first foot in. And that's what I believe God has shown me, that this airport represents a serious flood stage Jordan River death scenario. Death has come. Everything has been locked up. Everything has been held back. It is totally impossible for me to get across that Jordan River. It's impossible. Who in their right mind would ever think that I'm going to make a recording on the other side of this that says, here I am. I believed, and it has been to me exactly according to my belief. I'm on my way down the runway to get on this plane to go to my wife. And I know this is going to happen. I just don't know how, and I'm amazed to think about it. God is going to do something like I've never seen or imagined in my life for 12 years of obeying him, such that tens of thousands of people have been following my life in one way or another, seeing God do amazing things one after another. And here God is getting ready to do the biggest miracle I've ever seen, the biggest wonder. If this isn't going to make you wonder, if you're not sitting here wondering, I mean, I'm wondering, how in the world is God going to do this? But I mean, we have to look at the Jordan River. You have to look at the Jordan River backing up at flood stage, and you have to ask yourself, how in the world did that happen? How in the world, like yesterday, we were looking at that passage in Kings where it talks about, you will see neither rain nor wind, yet this valley will be full of water. And this is an easy thing for the Lord to do. This is an easy thing for the Lord to do. And so that's what he's saying is he's going to do. And that's what he's saying is going to happen. That God is going to do something for him that's easy. For you and I, we look at this and we go, wow, this is absolutely impossible. I mean, how in the world does God bring no rain? They've never seen water come from nowhere before, so they can't possibly understand, wait a second, there's going to be no rain and no clouds, but you're telling us when we wake up in the morning, this land is going to be full of ditches that are filled with water? What? And all we had to do was to dig the ditches? Think about how foolish it would have seemed to them to be digging ditches, and they've already been told there is going to be no rain. Well, what? You don't, that doesn't make any sense. How is water going to fill up in these holes with no rain? They've never seen such a thing before because it doesn't exist. Without God's help, it won't happen. So I'm looking at all these principles that God just keeps showing, the God of the impossible, the God of wonders, how he leads you into this place of absolute helplessness where all human resources, all human aid has come to a fail. That's exactly where I'm standing. Everything has been blocked. I was not able, I had to cancel my medical appointment for the visa because I didn't have my passport. I can't get my passport because of the unjust child support balance. I can't get my visa because I don't have my passport and I don't have a medical exam. I can't even apply for a visa right now because the borders are closed. I can't get on the airplane because I don't have an MIQ isolation appointment. I don't have an MIQ isolation appointment because they're so overbooked and people destroyed rooms and they're running short and et cetera, et cetera. There's no rooms left available. They're booked way out. I mean, it's like everything is locked up. God, to me, it's so crystal clear. God has allowed everything to be locked up. And then yesterday, you look at how we got hit. Two significant things again happened yesterday from Satan. I was on this high of faith yesterday morning. By the end of the evening, I was so melancholy and quiet. And it comes out again that Lisa has been attacked again by a very sinister, ugly dream that's designed to hit me right in the heart. And this just keeps happening over and over to the point where I was so humbled and kind of almost trying to prevent myself from being mad at God. And I said, God, it looks like you're allowing Satan to bully us. This is more than just adversity, more than just affliction, more than just opposition. I mean, God, she's having these dreams now pretty much every other night. And I'm frustrated by this. And I'm like, God, do you want your bride having dreams like this? You know, and having this impact on her? You know, and I said it very delicately to the Lord, but I did say it, Lord, I'm struggling. And then by the time I finished praying, my heart had calmed down and I acquiesced to it. And I said, Lord, your will be done. You're obviously allowing this for a reason. Then I get up this morning, I read Sparks. He's talking about how God will intentionally allow the enemy to come in inundation, to come in like a flood. He intentionally allows this so that when he does what he's going to do, and he's talking about Gideon in the book of Judges, chapter 6 example, where all the, you know, look like a sea of grasshoppers out there. And he's talking about how that's being inundated. He allowed the enemy to come in like a flood. And then he shows himself supreme, and he does it with really kind of in a ridiculous way by faking out the enemy and turning them against each other, not because God sent, you know, 100,000 more warriors than he had, than the enemy had. He runs them off in a rather silly way, but nonetheless, he shows himself as supreme. He kind of shows that he doesn't even have to bring out very many resources. It's so easy for him to defeat the enemy when he wants to, that he can do so with a couple of crackpot 300 guys who lapped water like dogs and who only have a torch, a trumpet, and a little broken vessel with a light in it. That's not your typical thinking of how you would defeat an enemy, and God does it with this kind of silly way. And so I'm just wondering, like, how is God going to do it? The next subject that I wanted to capture is, I've asked the Lord to help me to have perfect faith all the way. I've had no fear since I've been out here this morning in prayer. The fears came upon me this morning, and then I had this strangely ironic encouragement come to me from making the connection to Satan coming in like a flood and the fact that Satan knows God is up to something. I simply reckoned that if Satan knew we had been misguided, if Satan knew that he is the one that has infiltrated our ranks and given us false counterfeit guidance, counterfeit hope, counterfeit faith, etc., there would be no reason for him to continue to assault my wife like he is with these dreams. There'd be no reason. I mean, pretty much it's been that when she goes to bed, she's going to battle. It's unreal. She said, honey, I think God's allowing this because, you know, like, you're having the real battles on the in the external way with all the circumstances and all that, and I'm kind of not. So it seems like this is, and I said, yeah, that's probably true. And she's going to bed to go to battle, basically, most often. And I mean, you look at, she said last night, she says, I never had any dreams like this in the 5 years after I kicked him out. Never. And now she's having all these dreams. It's horrible. I mean, it's just unbelievable. If it's not one thing, it's another. It's just constantly being attacked in her dreams. But God is keeping her. So I have to say that. If the Lord is keeping her and giving her grace, may He give her grace even now as she sleeps. I've already prayed for her today while she's sleeping right now. But I looked at it and I said, okay, if Satan knew we were going to be defeated, he had already defeated us, and that God was not going to show up miraculously to deliver us, there would be no reason for him to expend this much intentional effort in trying to discourage us, in trying to get us out of faith, in trying to get us to separate and back off from this promise of each other, et cetera, et cetera. There'd be no reason why he would be going to this length. So I took some great ironic encouragement that, you know, Satan knows something's up. And when you look at Jesus, the temptation of Jesus Christ, it would appear that he's the greatest temptation comes at the very end, when he's almost finished and he's very hungry. And so here we have the same situation where I've been fighting and fighting and fighting, and Satan is now attacking the most valuable thing to me and the greatest motivation of my going there, my wife. He's hitting her over and over and over again right in front of me. And God is allowing it. And I do see Romans 8:28 in it. I do see that my wife is able to love me, not just by feelings and brain chemicals. I do see that my wife obeys God not when just things go well. I do see that she doesn't quit. She's not a quitter. God gave me a woman who's not a quitter, because she, you know, I'm not a quitter. And so I'm seeing some that she's willing to fight. She's willing to pay a cost to get into this land. And that is beautiful. And she has shown such a remarkable attitude about this. And she's bounces back, and she's open and honest about how she's feeling through it, and et cetera, et cetera. But then she always knows that deep down, this is just temporary, and we just have to keep going. And feelings are so fickle. They come and go, and fear's up and down, and faith is up and down. We just have to keep going and keep standing, and that God will give us rest. I said, remember, he showed us that scripture that he hadn't given us rest yet from all of our enemies, because we hadn't yet entered into and possessed our inheritance. I said, but that is going to come. We are going to have rest. Our rest is coming, and we're almost there. Why would God tell us, I will give you the 9/11 booking, and then open it up telling me in advance he was going to do it, and he did it? I was able to tell the exact day that something was going to happen, and the day that we get the booking opened up, it happens. On that day, seven other things happen. Why is it that I knew that? Why, when we prayed for $40,000, Lord, if you want us to send the tiny house off, you have to move on somebody's heart to send us $40,000. Is there any possibility that could ever happen by accident? And then he sends us directly thereafter $44,444, gives us $4,444 more, 444. He decrees victories for Jacob and tells me the day that the money will be in the account in advance of the lady telling me the day the money will be in the account on July 21st. Why would he do these things? Why would he have answered our prayers about Lisa's daughter finally being okay with me coming and actually being excited after standing against it so hard? Why would he go to all the trouble to answer our prayers on that and tell us to trust him? And we did, and he delivered us. Why has he answered all of our prayers to encourage our faith with one another when we got down? Why has he kept us in such perfect unity? Why has he continued to allow our love to grow so strong and so deep to overcome, where we can look at each other and go, my goodness, we fought our hardest battle before we ever even got to the marriage altar. That it's all downhill for us from here. We fought our hardest battle just to get into this thing. Why would God do all those wonders and all those miracles and answered prayers and more than I can even imagine? Why did God tell me today move forward on the plane ticket? Today I get the plane ticket and it lands me 5 minutes on the date that God had given me, 8/28. Why did that happen so precisely and so perfect? Why is it the number 5, the number of God's grace? Why is it that I'm getting married to my wife 5 months to the day after we did our first Skype call? Why is that? Why is the timing so perfect on that? Why is it that, you know, 7 days after we do our Skype call, God tells me, tell her she's your wife. Reach out to her. Why is that happening 7 days? Why is it, you know, all these 21-day events that are happening in there? Why is this that God is doing all of this stuff, answering all these prayers, blessing us, giving us all this providence, encouraging us, you know, when we, in the beginning of our relationship, when one of us would have a concern or a question about something, when we're kind of feeling each other out and learning about each other, and we have some sort of a concern or question or whatever, and we go to the Lord about it, and the very next thing that the person would say after they woke up next time would be on that subject, or within a short period of time, they would address specifically that subject. Why would God have done that? Going both ways. Why has God confirmed so many scriptures / numbers independent of one another? Why is it that I tell Lisa about this scripture in 119? She says, honey, 119 just kept coming to me this morning in prayer. Why is that? That then results in us moving forward on something which escapes me right at the time that we needed to move forward on. Why is it that God took care of the whole, you know, family division and kind of arguments that were starting to happen over this remarriage situation, where even the parents kind of got caught in the middle, and then they talked to their neighbor about it, who's a pastor, and they explain what I believe, and he says, oh no, I believe exactly what Michael believes, and then he comes over days later with a book on divorce and remarriage in the church. Why is it that that kind of thing happens? Why is it that without me even having to contact P, knowing that she has nothing to do with me, she suddenly contacts me after I had waited and waited and waited, not willing to contact her and say, hey, I'm running out of time. I really need to know if you're going to file the divorce. Why is it that I never had to contact her? And I told Lisa, nope, I am not going to contact her. God has said arranged and secured in every part. That is a great thing for me to remember. Why is that? That when she then informs me that she has not filed the paperwork yet, she noticed that we had signed in some wrong places. And I said, oh my goodness, I have 30 days left till I leave. I need to get this done right away. Why is it then that she misses 2 days where she said she would go and sign the papers after I go and then and restart the process a third time, file the paperwork, get it done? Why is it then that she misses 2 days and she doesn't go? And I don't have to follow up with her. I don't have to say, hey, what happened? I don't have to do any of that. And why is it that when she finally shows up, she does so on July 30th, exactly 11 years to the day that my first ex-wife filed for divorce? Because God is orchestrating and showing that He is in perfect timing. Why is it then that we received the divorce paper final decree 7 days to the day from the date that it was filed? Why is that? If God is still doing all this stuff by numbers, if God is still showing all this time that I'm in control of this, that He's in control of judges, they're the highest law of the land, that He's in control of judges' time, judges' schedules, judges' decisions on when they say this and when they don't say this, that He's in control of attorneys' schedules and attorneys' fees and all these things. He's in control of all of it. Why is God continuing to show that He has done all of this, that everything is being arranged and secured in every single part, for then to allow me to show up at this airport and be nothing more than a fool of faith? Why would God do that? Why would God bless us as much as He has with grace and faith? Why would God have kept us in such perfect peace inside our heart in spite of all these oppositions and all these obstacles and all these attacks from Satan and all the impossibilities and all the people? Have you heard anything yet? Anything new on Michael's passport? Any chance of him getting an MIQ yet? Have you heard? Do you know the new news? We're now in lockdown. I mean, the circumstances just continue to get worse and worse and worse. People keep asking, why is it that He continues to keep us in faith? Why is it that today I'm not defeated, that I'm still believing in the face of the most impossible circumstances I've ever seen? I've never seen anything this hard in my entire life. I'm going up against an entire nation's government. I'm going up against the COVID virus. I'm going up against my nation's government with not having a passport. My government's not going to let me get on a plane without a passport. The United States government, the most powerful nation on earth. How in the world is God going to do this? And yet He says, these things are easy for me. It truly makes me wonder, like, God, are you going to, like, have an angel, like, hold my hand and walk me invisibly through security and then just have me just, like, appear sitting in a seat somewhere, you know, on the airplane? Like, are you going to have to walk me into that airplane, like, and just suddenly, poof, I show? I mean, honestly, I'm going, how is God going to do this? How is God going to do this? This is absolutely amazing. And so I, trying to capture as many things as I can remember, there is no way that God has done all of this. 8:12, my phone just lights up at 8:12. And I can never remember what 8:12 is. I never understand 8:12. God showed this to me all the time regarding P. During the time of P, I'd see it over and over and over again, and I always just thought, well, I guess she's coming back on August 12th. I mean, I could never find a scripture that made any sense regarding 8:12, and I just didn't know what it was. Except for the fact that on Psalm 34:19 on page 8:12 of my Bible, a righteous man may have many troubles, but the Lord delivers him from them all. He protects all his bones, not one of them will be broken. And you know, that's what I'm talking about, isn't it, in this testimony. God, I've had so many troubles, and the Lord has delivered me out of all of them. That scripture right there on page 8:12 in my Bible, Psalm 34, it starts at verse 17. The righteous cry out, and the Lord hears them. He delivers them from all their troubles. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. A righteous man may have many troubles, but the Lord delivers him from them all. He protects all his bones. Not one of them will be broken. And it's 8:13 right now as I look back up. And that's that go. It will be done to you just as you have believed. And that's what Jesus has been telling me, I believe, for the last couple of days. And I'm believing I'm going to that airport. I believe something amazing is going to happen. And I don't know. Maybe the Lord sees I'm willing to do it. Maybe I wake up in the morning and there's a passport. Maybe all of this is a moot point. Maybe I wake up in the morning, I doubt it, and there's a passport. And the Lord's saying, well, if you doubt it, it won't happen. But I think the Lord is going to make it more difficult than this. There's no doubt it would be a wonder if I woke up and there was a passport, a visa, and an MIQ reservation sitting on the table for me. There'd be no doubt that's an amazing wonder. And I asked the Lord, I said, Lord, if you could do this in any way, if you wanted to know, earlier I had said this to him maybe a week ago, if you asked me what would be the best way for me to do this, I said, not that you are, but if you were asking me, which he's not, I want to be clear. That's what I told him. I said, I would love to come down and supernaturally see this. But it looks like the Lord has most likely something different in store. That he is going to do something that I cannot even possibly imagine. He's waiting till the very last minute. He's causing me to show a biblical principle that I'm going to have to step foot into the death of the circumstances in what is going to be symbolic of the Jordan River, this Atlanta International Airport. And, you know, I've asked the Lord to please keep me from being afraid. I've asked the Lord, please allow me to have this one without fear. I've been afraid of many other things where I've had to move forward in spite of fear. And I'm saying, Lord, your word says, do not be afraid, just believe. And so I'm just going to just hold on to that 5:36. Do not be afraid. Just believe. And I'm saying, Lord, there's no reason for me to sink. There's no reason for me to cry out to you, you know, like Peter, you know, that I'm walking on water and I begin to sink. I said, God, don't push me past my limits, please, Lord. But, you know, Father, grant me that peace that surpasses all understanding and keep me in perfect peace. Because my mind is steadfast and I've trusted in you. And Lord, let me just walk calmly and I just have a calmness over me. I do feel it in spite of all the drama of me sharing in this recording. I do feel a peace and a calm. And I said, God, just keep me in it all the way. Let me just walk in there fully assured that even though, and see, the thing is this is that battle, Galatians 5:17, between the human senses, the flesh, and the spirit. And it's very difficult to put down that part of you that is all senses, that's all flesh and blood, that's all human reasoning, that just has lived its entire life making decisions based on logic. And suddenly when the supernatural knocks on the door, you don't have anything in you that can accept that, that can reason that, that it's like, that's why you wonder, because you're like, how did this happen? Because we are so limited We're earth dwellers made of dust. We can't imagine the supernatural. It's very difficult for us. We can only imagine it and accept it by a sixth sense called faith. And so I'm asking the Lord to please not allow my flesh to win the battle and get me in fear. I mean, this is a very dramatic thing. I've never done anything this crazy in my life. And I just want to be clear for anybody that ever hears this recording that I am fully aware in my natural how stupid this is. I am fully aware. Lisa and to answer this question, Lisa and I laughed and we were in stitches just the day before yesterday about them coming and putting us in the white coats, and our promised land ends up being her and I sitting in two wheelchairs next to each other on some sort of a medicine trip where they've put these drugs in us to inebriate us from this nonsense we're talking about God getting us into the promised land, if you will. We just laughed and laughed and laughed about how if God doesn't do this, we're fit for the funny farm. This is so insane. This is so ridiculous. I mean, I have never, okay, it's not ridiculous to walk into a courtroom with no attorney. A lot of people do it because they can't afford one or they feel overly confident in their ability to defend themselves. It's dangerous, but it's not necessarily ridiculous. Going to the airport under the conditions I'm going to the airport under tomorrow morning, that is ridiculous. I realize how absolutely crazy it is. It's just as crazy as if you've been told, hey, listen, man, I know that that water is like nothing you've ever seen before. I know that it's rushing in flood stage. I know that it spells death and danger all the way across it, and there's no way for you to get across it. But listen, if you'll just walk up to that thing and put your foot in it, it'll stop and it'll back up, and it won't just stop. It'll back up miles all the way up to that city way up there called Adam. What? I know you guys are really thirsty, but if you'll just speak to that rock, water will come out of it. What? I did this with Lisa last night, and I just went from example to example to example to example to example to example of all the things in the Bible that just so quickly come to my head, you know, that are absolutely ridiculous crazy. Water coming out of rocks, hands showing up writing on the words before King Belshazzar, you know, the unbelievable dreams foretelling the future, fire coming down from heaven to destroy the sacrifice, people being thrown into a furnace seven times hotter and never having anything happen to them. All these unbelievable miracles that you see, or where God calls them, go do this and this will happen. And you're like, what? You have to, in those moments, to the natural part of you, look like an absolute imbecile. And I'm willing to do it. I'm willing to be a fool. I'm willing. And I had originally envisioned walking up to the ticket counter and saying, ma'am, my name is Michael Criswell, and I have a ticket, but unfortunately, I was not yet able to get a passport. Here's my application for one. It did not come. And because of this, I was not able to apply for a visa. But I do qualify for being married to a partner in New Zealand, and I am getting married on 9/11, and we do have a marriage registration. And I felt myself just giving her everything I had, and then her saying, Michael, I am so sorry. There's nothing I can do for you without a passport, so forth and so on. I can't do anything for you. And I saw myself saying, you know something? It's okay. In the kingdom of God, the greatest virtue one can have is humility. And there's no way I can go through what I'm going through right now without gaining a tremendous amount of humility. I literally saw myself and I said, Lord, I'm willing to be humbled. I'm willing to walk up and I'm willing to be turned away. And I had a really kind of a sad image of me. And another time I was thinking about it, I saw myself walking in the doors into the Atlanta airport, and I've got all my bags and I'm standing there all by myself. I don't have any other Levitical priests with me. I don't have tens of thousands of Jews behind me. I don't have Joshua before me. I have nobody. I'm standing there with these six suitcases and I'm looking like a lost puppy dog. That's a really sad picture that I had. And I'm like standing there like all alone going, God, what do I do? You know, you sent me this far. I'm standing here and I'm looking at all these people buzzing around. Everybody knows where they're going and I don't even know where I'm going. I don't know what to do. You know, and then all day yesterday, I see the 11:8s, Hebrews 11:8. Abraham went not knowing where he's going. So I'm not having that sad feeling Now, it's just sad to think about it because I felt sorry for myself having to walk into this situation all alone and totally vulnerable to being looked at as, you are an absolute ridiculous person. This is stupid. And if God does not deliver me, I will admit I am absolutely the most deceived, stupid person I've ever met in my life. But how could that be when everything he's ever said to me comes to pass? And if it didn't come to pass like I thought, P, it comes to pass better. Lisa, how is that possible? He's not going to let me down. He never has. I don't understand why God would trust me like this. This is crazy that God would trust me enough to believe him for something like this. I mean, honestly, I could have never seen this coming. I think if God would have told us in the very beginning this was going to happen, there's no way I could have the faith. God had to build up the faith in this moment. It's like going into the courtroom 9 years ago. That doesn't cover. It helps remind me of this, but that doesn't keep me fit for this. I needed to have regular training for this with Lisa and the miracles we've seen and the answered prayers and seeing her have the faith to believe this and how she's still going. How is it that my wife hasn't turned from me and said, this is just too nuts. I'm sorry. I'm out on this. I mean, this is crazy. You're going to have to go to Cuckooville on your own. I'm not going. How is it that she hasn't done that? She believes. She's been given a grace. That's a miracle. Because you can't, a carnal Christian right now thinks you are the biggest idiot. Or they're just so naive. They're just like, it's like charismatic naive. God can do it. It's a God thing. God can do anything. They just believe in anything. But there's no substance to it. They're not having to sweat it out. They're not having to be in the prison of circumstances. They're not having to face all the contradictory circumstances that scream you're a dummy. This is impossible. They're just believing this fantasy Disneyland type make-believe faith. There's no substance to it. This is real. I couldn't even have the ability to look this stupid going into that airport tomorrow unless God had given me all this other answered prayers and done all these providences and these signs and wonders with Lisa and I already. So I'm going without fear. I'm going to keep my eyes on him. I'm going to keep my chin held high, not in arrogance, not in pride. I just really want the Lord to be able to watch me walk fully in faith. This is the big point that I wanted to capture that I get distracted off of. I want the Lord to be proud of me. I want him to look down and see, there's real faith. I want him to say to me, I have not seen such faith in all of Israel. Like he keeps leading me to that one scripture and I'm going, God, are you saying that about me, Lord? Because I am fighting like crazy to believe him. I have said to him, just say the word. I have believed he could manifest my passport and a thing. I have believed, as evidenced by the fact that I've sent off my house, sold my stuff, sold my car, have no place to live, moving forward, buying suitcases, packed it all. I'm moving forward. God has seen my faith. Pack up all your belongings and prepare to leave the land. Well, you know something, the Israelites had to do the exact same thing in order to get to the Jordan. You have to have a certain amount of faith to believe that when you get there, that thing is going to open up for you and you're going to cross. It's a little different when you're going alone, you know, just Lisa and I, not 600,000 Israelites. So that when you show up, if it doesn't part, you're all a fool together. Lisa and I are all alone in this. But God is with us. You know, I mean, what are the chances of just 2 nights ago before that's, you know, I think, what was it, the same morning that I am told by God that I'm to walk to that airport, that this lady sitting in a MIQ isolation in New Zealand, of all places, is watching my videos and sends a message to her parents, because they're friends of the family, to let them know that she got across the border, I think, in Canada without her passport, without her papers, without proof of this, without a work permit, none of this. She's like, how does that happen? See, God is going to have to do this for me. New Zealand is much more difficult than Canada. Its walls are up to the sky. That's exactly what it is. But it's not too tough for the Lord. The Lord is going to do this. He is going to go before me. That's what I'm going to remember. That is what the Lord has wanted me to remember. Not that I'm having to go by myself. So Satan wants me to believe I'm going to go by myself. Satan wants me to believe I'm going to show up and have to stand there and spin in circles like a foolish little boy lost without his daddy, not knowing where he's going next. But God says he has gone before me. He will go before me and level the mountains. He will remove the bronze gates. He will open up doors for me that no one can shut. He is going to cut through the iron bars. He is going to go before like a consuming fire and eliminate. He is going to have an angel throw this mountain into the sea, Revelation 8:8. He is going to remove these obstacles and open doors before me that no one can shut. That's what God has said. If he did it for Cyrus, he can do it for me. He's been doing it for years. If God can make a promise to me, you will not be put to shame. You will not suffer disgrace. I believe it. He's done it many times. One of the best examples I had that letter from that judge. That was kind of scary. If you don't take this video down, you could face fines or imprisonment. I go out and I pray. I say, Lord, what do you say about this? That's what I said. I went out and said, Lord, what do you say about this? And the Lord just spoke to my heart. Do not even dignify it with a response. You will not be put to shame or suffer humiliation. So I ignored. There's another instance of where God allowed me to break the quote law. In order for the testimony to happen, God broke that law. The law says, you know, you cannot record in the courtrooms or whatever. And the law says you have to obey the judge. And in this instance, you'd have to say, you tell us whether it is right for us to obey you or God. And I obeyed God. And was I put to shame? No. Did I end up in jail? No. Did the video come down? No. Did I pay a fine? No. And I told people in the false God challenge in advance, God has told me he's going to do this. He's going to deliver me. I told people in advance. And God did not allow me to be put to shame. I never heard from that judge, never heard from that court. No consequences came. It's been over 2 years since that happened. No matter what that woman did to try to shut my mouth or to take that testimony, God did not allow it. He did not allow it. There it is. That's another example of God breaking the law for me. Like the time the court stenographer stood in front of everybody back in 2002. We get in the courtroom. After we leave the courtroom, we get in there and the stenographer, the court reporter's in there, and she says, I just want you to know, I've never seen anything like that in a courtroom before. She's like, that guy just broke the law for you, which he wrote. He wrote that law that he just broke. And it was the law that required me to have to escrow $120,000 in an escrow account, which was the amount of money in dispute and rents between myself and Simon Property Company. It would have absolutely destroyed me. I would have never gotten the money back. God broke the law for me. I did not have to do it. In the end, they came after me and sued me for the $120,000. And during the deposition, the night before, God sends me to that passage. You need only stand and see the victory the Lord will bring about for you tomorrow. Just stand. I go, I stand, I speak for 30 seconds after he starts asking me all these questions about the deposition. The next thing I know, within days, I receive letters saying, if you will drop your suit against us, we will drop our suit against you. And just like that, God wiped out $120,000 in debt. He did exactly what he said he would do for me. And this was long before I knew how to follow the Lord like I'm following him now. If he would do that for me then, how much more would he do it for me now when I carry my cross, deny myself, teach other people to do it, continue to hope in him, trust in him, put in my disciplines, continue to go, continue to persevere, continue to hope, overcome all things, keep going, never quit? How much more will God do something like that for me now if he would do that for me all the way back in 2001, 20 years ago? Broke a law for me again and again and again. Indian government law, I have the picture from the website. He broke it for me. Those are just three times I can think of right off the top of my head. There's several more. I don't have them off the top of my head. So I'm going to stay excited. I'm going to make another lap in prayer and thanksgiving. I'm going to have to keep the weight on the scales of faith. That's what I'm doing in this recording, is I'm remembering all that God has done. This is always what he tells the Israelites to do. Remember how the Lord your God, remember what he did for you. Set up that Ebenezer stone. Set up those 12 stones on the Jordan. You remember what God did for you. You tell it to your children. You remember the wonders he's done, the judgments he's pronounced, the miracles he's wrought. I keep seeing this Job 9:10. He performs wonders that cannot be fathomed and miracles that cannot be counted. Is that not exactly what I'm talking about in this entire recording? Miracles that cannot be counted. I can barely keep up with all the things God does in answering my prayers. I have so many journal entries of so many answered prayers and so many providences, they cannot possibly be counted. He performs wonders that cannot be fathomed. Look at the theme, wonders. Okay, we jump over here to Micah chapter 7, verse 15. As in the days when you came out of Egypt, I will show them my wonders. He keeps showing us all these scriptures, mighty acts of judgment, powerful signs, miracles, and wonders. I have begged God, Lord, please don't do this in a natural way. I've begged him to just kind of remember and keep the weight on the scale of faith. On the scale, there's a scale, faith on the right and the fear on the left. And I will keep putting weight on that faith side. Circumstances and fear on the left trying to weigh down and push, and Satan's there pushing it with his own hands. And yet I just keep, by looking at the faithfulness of God, the willingness of God, the power of God, the past faithfulness of God, and the promises of God, I keep putting weight on that right side of the scale to keep it balanced in favor of faith, because without faith, God can't do this miracle. We're doing everything by the textbook that we know to do. We're praising him. Last night, we spent so much time just praising him. We just thanked him. We didn't dare ask him except for to just do this in a way that brings you glory. We are, you know, and it's like there's always this part of you that thinks, you know how many people have prayed for this and haven't gotten answered prayers? You know how many people have believed that God would do a miracle and they didn't, and he didn't? You know how many people have gotten all excited and praised and faith? And you can feel that burning subtly somewhere. You can feel that little bit of doubt. And I'm just like, that's different. This is different. We have a lot of evidence up to this point that God is with us. It says, there's a scripture that says, so far the Lord our God has helped us. That's that Ebenezer stone in Samuel. Thus far the Lord has helped us. It's the remembering. And this is what I'm laying down in this recording, is an Ebenezer stone. Thus far the Lord has always helped me. Why is he going to stop now? Why would he have gone to all this trouble just to bring me into disaster? What good is that? I'm going to leave it at that. I'm halfway back out. I'm going to now spend the time in prayer and praise the Lord and just trust him and ask him to keep me strong all the way to the end, that I can see the glory of the Lord. Did I not tell you that if you believed, I mean, I'm getting ready to see a miracle. Father, I just thank you for this opportunity. I'm getting ready to see the most amazing miracle I've ever seen. It doesn't matter how it happens. What an adventure. What an unbelievable adventure this is turning out to be. I am headed towards my wife tomorrow. I mean, tomorrow morning, like 24 hours from right now, I am actually going to be headed towards my wife. We have not been able to make any progress. We have stayed put. Both of us have had tears in our eyes. Both of us have prayed. Both of us have praised. Both of us have pleaded with God. Both of us have endured patiently. We've had many days of bonding through the pain of missing each other and the desire to be with one another, the hope of God's glory in this. And now, here it is. I'm 24 hours away from finally being able to say, sweetheart, I'm on my way. This is incredible. Wow. Praise the Lord. Unbelievable what this journey is.